From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of August, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. We'll hear about the Ag Resource Company's tour of the Midwest, at least Illinois and Indiana, and what they saw in the way of corn yields, and that with Dan Bossy. And then as we close out our time together, Eric Snodgrass will be here to take a look at the weather forecast. And along the way, I'll tell you about the University of Illinois Market Maker Program, food banks, and farmers markets.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $6.26, up 6 1/4. December at $6.23 1/4, 7 1/2 higher in the March, up 7 3/4 at $6.30 1/2. Soybeans were lower on the day, down 6 3/4 for this Friday at $14.88 3/4 in the September, November at $14.04, 1 1/4 lower, and January at $14.10 3/4, down 3/4 cents. Bean meal finished of the day 70 cents lower. The bean oil off at rather up $1.64. The soft red winter wheat up 21 3/4 at $7.53 1/4. And the hard red at $8.44 3/4, up 32 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures were up 50, feeders down 90, and lean hogs off 17 1/2 cents today. Mike Zuzlo of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day and the week. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being with us on a Friday.
Great to be with you, Todd, and thanks for having me.
You know, it was an interesting week, especially for wheat, and you're a lot closer to that country than I am here, well, other than the soft red. I'm wondering what you thought of the markets this week.
Well, I was really, really sweating bullets, Todd, because we had taken out those major support lines on both the hard red and soft red wheat charts on the monthly basis. The support lines drawn off the 2020 lows, and I think we spoke about that last week. And we had a good USDA crop report to boot, and so it was extra negative because of that type of price action before Friday's trade. And so I was sitting here thinking to myself, okay, if I've lost the soybeans fundamentally because of the USDA report, and now I'm losing the wheat technically, and the USDA report was not the cause of that, I really do have to be nervous about a whole nother leg down and a continuation of another break of another 7, maybe 15% because of the funds likely dumping even more long positions and accruing even a greater net short position in the wheat. And so Friday was, to put it mildly and not even to touch it, was very timely. And it was really a saving grace when it came to holding up the analysis, especially given that the July low in hard red wheat was 8.14 1/2. We're going to close about 30 cents above that on Friday's close. And that's very necessary not to close just within a couple cents of it. So that was very necessary. And so we go into the weekend with, I think, a little bit more sentiment shift that the row crops could bounce further on drier weather.
Do you know who the buyers were? Because it would be fairly important if it was an end user or commercials that were doing that.
I looked all day to find out who it was, and I didn't contact anybody in Chicago. I probably should have done that, but I would suppose that the foundation of the break to the downside earlier in the week was due to either Ukraine and more grain moving and the European Union futures driving prices lower instead of fighting the weakness at the mercantile exchange, and or the inflationary bull, who's now turned more towards an inflationary bear. When I looked at the outside markets, the dollar, the bond yields, it didn't look like it was the footprint of the inflation bull coming back in. I think it may have more to do with what's going on around that nuclear power plant in Ukraine, because around the time that we saw the wheat turn around in Chicago in the late morning trade, Reuters was reporting that Putin had told the French President Macron to be concerned about a, quote, catastrophe surrounding that plant. So I'm guessing that Ukraine was the key to why we turned this thing around and why shorts covered.
Yeah, and we do have, of course, Chernobyl as a historical context to put this in, and that took a lot of farm ground out of production for quite some time.
It really did. And I think the other thing that really took us down earlier in the week that I felt like it wasn't really justified why we went down, and maybe the shorts were a little bit weaker in their desire to hold positions, was Iraq canceling their tender and then USAID coming in and buying Ukrainian wheat for poor countries instead of buying our own U.S. wheat. And I think those two reasons, I felt like that was a big reason why we shot lower on Wednesday and really didn't have the ability to recover. And I think maybe those shorts in that market also decided maybe to flatten out.
So that's some speculation that could or may not become the plant, the nuclear power plant, that is, a fundamental. However, you did talk about the dry weather conditions in the United States and some issues there. Is there going to be enough rainfall? And is it too late for corn? And what does it mean for soybeans?
Yeah, I think it is too late for corn. I mean, I wrote after I did my yield estimate of 171.5 a little over a week ago to ask clients to send in a lot of pictures as they started doing their scouting. And I've seen a lot of pictures of the tip back, and it's substantial tip back. And even in areas where they weren't expecting it, like irrigated areas of northwest Missouri. So also been talking to clients who have just talked to their seed reps or their agronomists with their seed companies, and they're starting to hear more about tip back from those types of people. So I do think we're too late for the corn, except for maybe in the northern parts of the Corn Belt. And I think a laser focus that I'll have here next week will be how much rain in the next 7 days does essentially from Des Moines, Iowa to Rochester or Mankato, Minnesota get, because that's probably the area that can really help it. A colleague of ours I spoke with earlier today up near Fargo said they were sitting in very good shape and they're going to have a lot better crop than they did last year. So that crop could be added to with some more rains. But for the majority of the I-80 to say I-50 or Illinois 50 area, I think that the crop is pretty much denting and is pretty much in maturity at this point. It's really the soybeans that, between the Chinese news, the Chinese drought in their number one pork province, and the weather here in the United States, I think the beans still have the most downside potential, Todd.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuccolo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. I made note on Twitter this week that Dan Bossi, the president of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, decided to get out of the office and check out the corn crop in Illinois and Indiana with a few others in tow. They made a pretty extensive trip across the two states. I called him this morning to ask what exactly they found.
Well, we put in about 1,950 miles of stretching all across Iowa and Illinois. We only focused on the big I states. And we do that because we feel if we get them right, a lot of good things happen. And we went as far west as we could in the western parts of Iowa, looking for holes and problems. And Todd, we really didn't find any. And so there was some struggles with fields south of I-80 in the southwest portions of Iowa. But as we came east, a few fields that were stressed, but not to the degree we were expecting. If we had to put the Iowa corn yield out today, it'd be somewhere between 199 and 203 a bushel from our expectations. Pod counts were up about 4% from last year's Pro Farmer Tour. So all in all, Iowa's looking at a very respectable corn crop. When we moved into Illinois, we were surprised the other way because we were thinking we'd find holes in Iowa. But when we moved into Illinois, especially as we got into the center part of the state, we found some real problems with ear tipping, smaller cobs, circumferences not being up to the expectations, and our counts there projected that the crop was going to be in somewhat cut. I think in a lot of fields relative to last year or Pro Farmer, we were finding that yields were off anywhere between 15 and 35 bushels an acre. So this may be the year in which Illinois and Iowa yields kind of equal out. Illinois yield counts from our data would put the state yield between 199 and 204, so maybe a bushel on the higher end. But overall, the central and southern parts of Illinois were not up to our expectations. We think it's due to later planting dates. We think there was some stress. Of course, there was some dryness before early July, and when we combined it all together, plant population's very strong, but not the ear size or ear counts. And here's the big going forward. It's hard today when the milk line is still moving down, but we're concerned about what we would call corn seed size, maybe pod seed size or soybean seed size going forward if we don't have regular rains forthcoming. So that can't make, but we could be looking at smaller corn seed sizes. Circumferences were not up to our expectations, not as many as 18 or 20s in the count. And so that's something to be watching going forward.
Do you think the crop was better or worse than you expected across the two-state region as a whole?
Better in Iowa, worse in Illinois, and combined, I think it's going to give us a yield, both states, again, being somewhat equal, maybe in around that 200 bushel an acre mark. So that would be down a little bit from USDA. And if we plug this in utilizing other state yields as USDA had them, it would put us down in the 174-ish type of area right now. So not a big ding on the national yield, but enough that it's going to tighten up stocks looking forward.
And while I have you, what is your advice to producers at this time?
Well, you know, we're now in that that phase of shifting from old to new crop. We believe, like last year, we're still going to be looking at trends and opportunities forthcoming with new sales to China and some other destinations. The EU has a very dramatic drought, so our recommendation is it's not a time to be making sales. We think there'll be a strong post-harvest rally that'll give us better opportunities as we look forward to the late year period or first quarter of 2023.
Thank you, Dan.
Take care, Todd.
Dan Bossi is the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago. Next week, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour will be out and about, and we'll have updates on our website each and every day. And we'll also hear from Sherman Newland at Risk Management Commodities. He'll be on the western leg of that tour, along with Brian Grady. He will be on the eastern leg and, of course, lead the tour. We'll talk to him Friday with the final Pro Farmer results, which are different than the tour results as well. It's been 19 years since I first started reporting on Market Maker. It's an online database developed by Illinois Extension star and Rich Knipp. Their initial vision was to build a secondary marketplace to the CME Group that allowed direct arbitrage of products, corn and soybeans and wheat and those kinds of things, between buyers and sellers. Now, Market Maker is still around and still being adapted. Earlier this week at the Illinois State Fair, I talked with Rogella Scabuzzo. She's the executive director of Illinois Specialty Growers Association and the associate director of food systems development for the Illinois Farm Bureau. They're piloting a program using Market Maker's vast database, it incorporates the entire U.S. Census data, to hook up farmers that grow the kind of food you find at farmers' markets with end users like food banks. There is a great deal of this truck food that doesn't get sold or didn't, and now, as you'll hear, there's a way for this to happen, a way for the farmer and the food bank to find each other. Here's Rogella Scabuzzo.
So in 2 years ago, in partnership with Feeding Illinois, Illinois Farmers Market Association, the University of Illinois Sustainable Technology Center, and the Illinois Specialty Growers Association and Farm Bureau, we launched a pilot program called the Farm to Food Bank Program. The idea of this is to reduce food waste and create new market opportunities for products that didn't currently have a home, move to the most vulnerable populations in our community. The idea that the food banks would pay for the cost of the product for the farmers to recover some of their losses, and it would get to the programs. Today, we are taking that one step further.
How?
So we have been using an online directory system called Market Maker that was developed by University of Illinois. It is our shop local statewide program. We have over 2,400 registered food and farm businesses in it. In that system, there's what's called a buy-sell forum. This buy-sell forum is a place that farms can create ads to talk about the products they want. We asked, for Illinois Farm Bureau helped fund a program with Market Maker to and Food for All, which is their transaction component, to add an exclusive section called the Donations and Discounts Depot. This is exclusive for nonprofits. So it's not just food banks, it's not just food pantries, it's any nonprofit looking for food. Farms are gonna be able to post in this system. They're going to add anything that they have seconds at any rate that they want, so they can either discount it or they can add donations however they'd like. And in real time, it's going to connect to those nonprofits who can do a direct transaction through there at that moment and get the product that they need.
and then the farmer delivers it to the food bank?
Or can ask for pickup, depending on what the Farm Bureau farmer wants, so they can set that autonomy and negotiate that within the system.
How successful do you think it will be?
I have very high hopes for this. We've been running the pilot program with high success. Last 2 weeks ago, we actually ran our first farmers market pilot, where the farmers markets worked as an aggregation. They were just doing a test run before they formally launched it. Farmers brought in 685 pounds of food to that farmers market, to the food pantries, just on the first test of this. So we think that this is a great opportunity when farmers have that product to connect with those that need the food. This is going to be a pilot until January, so we're asking farms and nonprofits to register in Market Maker and with Food for All to pilot this with us, so we build a system that is based on what they need the most.
To register, farmers and the end users, food banks and others that might be interested in these products should search out Market Maker. You can do that online. Actually, look for Illinois Market Maker, and you'll find University of Illinois down at the bottom in the partners, along with Farm Credit Services and USDA. Up at the top in the right-hand corner, there's a place to register and get yourself signed up for Market Maker. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dackable. Hi, Eric. Can you start by telling me about the recent rainfall?
Yeah, so here in just the last week to 10 days, there were pockets throughout the Corn Belt that did get some rain, and specifically parts of southern South Dakota, getting into northern Nebraska, cutting through parts of southwest Iowa and into Missouri. And those rains were desperately needed. That was where some of the driest ground had been so far. But delivering better rains into pockets, the rest of Iowa, like parts of central Illinois over to Indiana, there was a bit more sporadic. But the only thing that's been good is that our temperatures have come back in those particular areas. Biggest spots that I am worried about is the rest of Nebraska, the fact that we still have really low soil moisture across most of Iowa, and folks in Kansas are having the driest start to any August on record. So we have some pretty big problems in the Western Corn Belt that continue to kind of surface. And given the upcoming forecast, we're going to be seeing those areas continue to be stressed pretty badly. So here we are in the middle of August, talking about important rains for grain fill and also for soybeans. And it's really lacking for a lot of folks, despite the temperatures finally coming down.
And what is the near-term forecast?
Well, we're going to be pretty lucky here in that we've got this upper-level low that's spinning through parts of Minnesota today on Friday, and it's going to be coming over the eastern Corn Belt throughout the weekend. So it's going to increase our chances for seeing some showers. Yeah, we're bringing in some wet weather for a weekend, but we would really need it. It would be a great bit of moisture here as we're finishing up this month. It's also going to keep our temperatures cooler than normal. So again, we'll watch for that to be coming through later on this weekend. But the problem is where the rains leapfrog. They miss Nebraska. They miss Kansas, they miss parts of Iowa, and they miss parts of Missouri. Where they really hammer is down in the southern plains, right along the Red River Valley of the South, which is between Texas and Oklahoma. There are some estimates that from New Mexico into Texas and Oklahoma, all the way across the lower Mississippi River Valley and into maybe even the Carolinas, that we could be seeing 1 to 4 inches of rain, maybe some locations over a foot of rain. And this is not good, given how dry that it's been down there. We love to see the rain, but we don't want to break a drought all at once. And that's going to be very problematic, especially for cotton growers down there. With cotton open bowl, you put 4 or 5 inches of rain on it, it's going to ruin the crop. And so there's major problems happening right now in the southern United States because of this heavy rain that's coming through.
Do you have prospects for the months of September and October?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're heading towards September here, and we're waiting on tropical systems to get going, but none seem to really be forming. And that's despite La Nina's help, but we've had a pretty dry, dusty, and quiet tropical season so far, with really just no major systems to speak of. I don't expect that to always hold true, but with La Nina, normally as you get into the month of September, we tend to be a bit drier than normal, which is not going to be a bad thing if we want that crop to dry down in the field and get this crop to finish. So that's one part of it. But September's also notorious for those late summer thunderstorm complexes that you can't forecast more than a few days in advance, but do come through. So I'll be on the lookout for that, possibly just showing up at the wrong time. But if we do get a big tropical system at some point, remember the peak of the hurricane season is around September 15th, we could really see a big, you know, flux of moisture coming up. Now, again, don't see it right now, but it's a possibility. So I think in terms of, you know, having a halfway decent fall, we're kind of set up for that. Am I worried about an early frost? I am not at this point, although I'll just make a comment. The northern plains are going to be very vulnerable to even an on-time frost, given that they planted so much of their corn and beans into late May and early June this year because of how cold and how much flooding they had early. So this crop is a bit delicate as it kind of works its way toward the finish line. And I'll be interested to see what all of the, you know, the big tours that are out right now kind of come back with. And then, of course, what the USDA says in mid-September.
You mentioned dry and dusty is related to the hurricane issues. Is that something that has to do with Europe and or Africa?
Well, it has a lot to do with Europe and Africa. We've had several large ridges of high pressure that have gone through Europe, and that's what's created some of the big drought stress across, you know, that whole continent or part of that continent. And, you know, parts of France and Germany right now are recording the lowest NDVI values going back over 20 years. We know that like some of the big rivers, like the Rhine River, it was at some points completely dry. Like if you were in it on a canoe, you'd have to pick up and walk. Although I don't think there's a lot of canoeing going on in the Rhine River. But, you know, you get the point here. It's been so hot and so dry. And all that heat now is over Russia's wheat belt. So the same thing that's kind of creating those ridges has also really given us a pretty strong African monsoon. But the African monsoon has been good about blowing a lot of dust off of the Sahara. And each one of these systems that comes out off of the west coast of Africa is kind of having to chew on that dust. And it just makes it difficult to produce a tropical cyclone.
La Nina continues. Will it impact the South American growing season?
Now, this is probably the most important question, bigger picture for markets. And the reason why is the long-range models that just released, look out the next 45 days, they want Brazil to have good early season rains. The whole country from south to north, better rains are in the forecast. Whereas Argentina is showing up drier, Uruguay is showing up drier. Now, if those rains materialize, we could see a pretty fast plant. But talking with some friends and colleagues down there, we have a lot of apprehensive growers. And what I mean by that is that they know there's a La Nina, and they know that that often makes the start of the monsoon kind of come in and fits. In other words, it rains and then it backs off for a few weeks. So a lot of them, even though the rain could be coming in early, may still sit and wait until it's fully established to get going. What I'm concerned about is, all right, bring a bunch of rain in right when they could start planting, which is around September 15. But what if it backs off in mid-October? That would be the wrong time to get less than normal rains. They'd have to go through and do a replant because of poor germination issues. And then we'd compress their entire crop cycle by having them plant and replant again later. So I'm going to tell you, well, Todd, we're at the point now where we'll be talking about Brazil for the next 7 months. But, you know, it's really starting off with a little bit of a wild card down there that's going to be important to watch.
That means we'll have really good discussions. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Dacable. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Don't forget that on many of these radio stations, you'll hear Commodity Week, our weekly program, over this weekend. Our panelists this week included both Kurt Kimmel and Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. You can always hear it online to at willag.org, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast application. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is produced and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.